Hello, friends. Welcome to What Time Was I Born? An astrology podcast where I interview people through the lens of their birth chart. My name is Nadine, and I'm an astrologer based in New York City. You can find me on Instagram at NadineJane_astrology or on my website, www.NadineJaneAstrology.com. And yes, you can book a birth chart reading with me there. Hello, friends. On today's episode, I'm going to talk to Jamie Alexander. If you've never heard of her before, you could see her on the show Kyle XY or in the movie Thor. And the reason why I brought her on as a guest wasn't really just because she was an actress. I did a reading for her recently and just discovered that there is an incredible amount of depth, an incredible amount of empathy, and as you'll find throughout the episode, an incredible amount of water in her chart. And so the theme of today's episode is for any of you water signs, and it's titled The Empath from the perspective that she uses all of this incredible understanding and intuition in not only her professional life, but in her personal life as well, and as well as her spiritual journey. So in case you're curious and want to know before we get into it, Jamie is a Pisces sun. She is a Gemini rising. Her moon is in Cancer. And her Mercury is in Pisces, her Venus is in Aquarius, and her Mars is in Scorpio. If you're at all interested in the houses, her Sun in Pisces is in the 10th house, her Moon in Cancer is in the 2nd house, her Venus in Aquarius is in the 9th house, and her Mars in Scorpio is in the 6th house. So if you have any similarities to these in your chart, you can take a good listen today. And if you don't, you might just find this interesting for understanding friends who have a similar chart, partners, anyone that you know, or just if you want to understand astrology on a deeper level. So I think you guys are going to really like this episode. And thank you to Jamie for participating and for being so open and honest. Jamie, how are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for having me.
So before we get into it, I just want you to tell everyone just a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
Well, my name is Jamie Alexander. I'm an actress. And let's see what else. I'm 35 at the moment. live in New York.
Up till now, what has your relationship with astrology been, if anything?
Oh, wow. I've just always had an inner knowing with astrology. I've always been connected to it. And just in the last, I'd say like couple of months. In those couple of months, I've really, you know, dug deeper into astrology. I just always before I was really interested in it, but now I'm actively pursuing it as like kind of like a little bitty roadmap for life, which I really, really like. I find it really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I really love it. And I also do other type of spiritual things. You know, I pray, I journal, I read tarot cards, like all of the above. I found that each division of spirituality or each organized religion or whatever, there's something good in each one of them that I've seemed to have taken and just made my own little, not religion, but my own little, you know, yeah.
Take what you like and leave the rest.
Yeah.
The rising sign. This is actually where I would begin a reading with any client. Because to me, it's the most outer layer as we begin to peel the onion of the chart. When it comes to Jamie, we're going to begin unpacking how her Gemini rising defines her identity. I jokingly like to call this part of the chart the head of PR. So it dresses Jamie, it gets her out of bed, it defines when she walks into a room, what kind of energy is she giving off to others? And then one of the deeper questions we're going to ask is, does this rising sign lend itself well to the rest of her chart? Does she feel like her first impression is authentic to who she is? Or does she very often feel misunderstood and like her first impression is a little bit of an Achilles heel when it comes to being profoundly accepted and understood in the world at large? So Gemini rising would basically imply that there's something curious, intelligent, but also changeable about you. So very often, especially in youth, Gemini rising can tell the story of someone who can be a chameleon. So it's someone who can shapeshift into whatever she needs to be to satisfy that person or that environment or that expectation that other people have of her. By the way, this on a very superficial level can actually mean that you can literally shapeshift your appearance. So I thought that your character, for instance, very interesting, where it actually displays this type of visual representation of a person that you actually aren't necessarily. But I'm curious, in your childhood, like, why was it helpful, necessary, any of the above, to shapeshift in any way?
Oh, wow. I had a very interesting childhood. It was, I guess I should say, it wasn't as effortless as I, you know, looking back, wish it was. There was abuse, and there were hardships, and we were pretty poor. So I think, yeah, I could see how my rising sign was beneficial, because I could in fact shapeshift, basically, which makes me all of a sudden sound cooler to myself. But yeah, you know, there were times you didn't want to make a certain person angry. I could sort of read people intuitively and know what would compliment them at the time, behavior wise. And I would do that. And it created, you know, safety for me and my family. And so I think, to be quite honest, I'm sure that's why I'm, you know, good at my job as an actress. It's because I have a lot of sympathy and a lot of intuition about what people want to see, what would work for them. The flip side of that is occasionally a lack of authenticity because of it. And so finding the balance in that has been, basically like a lifelong journey for me.
Yeah, I'm sure. And especially with the Pisces and the Cancer, you're reading people's emotional needs. So I could imagine how hard it is to not shapeshift to literally fit other people's deeper needs as well.
Yes. And that, that's something that I've been working on recently, just in my personal life, because I think what ends up happening is, especially from the lessons I've learned as a child, I'm a people pleaser in a way that is actually destructive towards myself. So whereas, like, obviously in my industry, being a Gemini rising would be great because I can be on a red carpet, do interviews. I can handle just about anybody they throw my way, whether they're rude and violent or very quiet, soft-spoken and sweet. Like, I can just match them and understand and make people feel very comfortable. And that's genuinely what I want. I want people to feel comfortable around me and never feel, you know, worried or scared or any of that stuff. But it can make me dishonest in ways that I will actively do something that I disagree with or that I don't want to do. And it can be destructive towards myself. So finding the balance is what I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
With that, it's just funny because isn't Gemini like two different people?
Yes.
Or something like twins or something?
Yes, exactly.
I don't know too
there can
much
be
about
a duality.
It.
There can be this feeling of like, there's this one version of myself that I might like to present, and then there's this other version of myself that people might only see when they're dating me or when they know me on a deeper level, or maybe in some people's cases, literally only when they're alone with themselves.
Yes, I have noticed that as well.
And what is the alone with yourself side versus comparing it to the outer Jamie?
I think the outer Jamie is very outgoing and charismatic, and the inner Jamie is very quiet and sensitive and introverted and also conflicted often because it's a weird thing. I guess maybe it is from being a Gemini rising. I occasionally do not know which side of myself is the true side.
Yes.
Which is interesting. And that obviously requires a little bit of meditation, self-discovery, journaling always helps me. Once I write it down, I can, you know, I often come to an answer that feels correct.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just so interesting. It's hard, especially in relationships. You know, you want to help the other person. You want to make them happy. You want to be there for them. And sometimes that can be destructive towards yourself.
Right. But at what cost?
Yeah. Right. So it's been interesting.
And well, we're going to get, so my last question just specifically about the Gemini rising, which is really just for anyone else who's listening, who's a Gemini rising, is since it's ruled by, your chart's ruled by Mercury, and Mercury is basically the planet of communication, the planet of words. And so I'm just curious, like, when you are, let's say, preparing for a role, do you digest the script really quickly? Are you someone who memorizes lines or reads quickly or just can digest information pretty easily?
Yeah, I do. I have a very photographic memory where I can, if I read a script, well, I'll start from this. And when I read a script, I immediately, my Cancer moon shows up and I feel very sympathetic towards the character.
Yeah.
I've never really been in an acting class or been taught how to do what I do. I just use my intuition and my, I guess, empathy to perform as said character. So that I connect really quickly with scripts. Now, there are times where I don't connect at all, and then I know it's not the right part for me. Right. And I've turned down things because of it. But when it comes to actually memorizing the day's work, I can read it once at like a table read or something. We have these things called table reads where all the characters get together and we read the script. And mm-hmm. that way the writers and the director can hear us actually speak the words on the page. But say I was going to go to work like on Blind Spot, the show I'm on right now. I could look at what we were doing that day that morning. Mm-hmm. And two times reading it through, about 10 pages or so, I can have it memorized.
One of the most interesting things to look at in the chart is to look at what elements are predominant and what elements are lacking. And in Jamie's chart, we're going to see that there is huge dominance of water in her chart. In her personal planets, we can pretty much see all of them fall in a water sign. That is a great strength. That essentially means that she's empathetic, she's intuitive. It probably makes her fantastic at being an actress. But the downsides are she can't always get in touch with these immense feelings and this immense emotional capacity. And at times it can feel so overwhelming that she might not even know what to do with those feelings. And lastly, if someone is this empathetic, they can at times get lost in other people's emotions. She is a Pisces sun. It's not uncommon to actually project your feelings onto other people, to lose yourself in the struggle of others, and lose yourself in the process. So in Jamie's story specifically, we're going to see how this played out in her alcoholism, but also how it gave birth to her road towards sobriety. Okay, so if we were like zoom out, like super big picture with your chart, you are a ton of water. Mm-hmm. And by the way, actually similar to me, we have no fire, believe it or not. There's like nothing in our chart. That's what I mean by like there's very little ego. Like you don't have, very often with anyone who's an actress or who's a singer, you can find some predominant Leo element in their chart, but you actually are very much water. Mm-hmm. And so something that I'm curious about for you is like, what has your relationship been like with your own emotions? Because your chart would imply there's a lot of them.
Oh, yes.
But the downside of having tons of water is like immense empathy, immense intuition, being able to read other people. How have those two competed with each other of like dealing with your own emotions versus dealing with other people's?
Well, this is the tricky thing I've come to learn is that I find it very hard to find where my emotions start and end and where someone else's start and end.
Yeah.
They tend to be just one giant squishy dough ball where they're all just like, you know, jumbled into one. So that also has been something I've been working on is making sure that I don't, like a sponge, soak up somebody else's, you know, anger, joy, whatever it is, because I will then be riding a high that is not authentic.
Yeah.
And it can affect my decision making and
or writing a low that's not yours.
Right. Exactly. And that happens more often than not. Joy is joy and that's wonderful, but man, when someone's angry or very upset, it's extremely hard for me to be around and not feel the same way. Mm. And I think again that's how I can play the characters I play. It's just that sympathy, that sponge like natural ability that I have to soak up whatever somebody else is going through and experience it for myself. That's why a lot of times when I'm talking with people and they're telling me about a hardship, I can say, I understand. Mm. You know, I can imagine what that feels like because I can feel it while I'm sitting there.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful gift, but it is also, like with anything in abundance, it can be destructive if you're not careful. Mm. And so that's something I've been working on recently. I feel so much. that I struggled with alcoholism for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm sober now, of course, but it was a way that I could shut off the sponge-like behavior.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize that. Obviously, once you get sober and you do the work, you realize why you were drinking in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you nip that in the butt. You know, you just get rid of that. And through awareness. So I think now that I don't have a way to numb it out there, you know, I have to look it right in the face and deal with it. And sometimes that, you know, you meditate, you take 5 minutes for yourself, you walk outside, whatever it is. But I have to shut that off so that I can get in touch with how I'm really feeling.
Yeah.
So that I know that what I'm feeling may not be what you are feeling. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so a lot of times in relationships, it can be destructive as well, because I will intuitively, quote unquote, feel something that is actually just mine and not the other person's. And so I can then misread somebody.
Yeah.
Or be misread, which is interesting.
Right. Like sort of like an enmeshment of whose feelings are what in the
right
relationship.
Right. And then again, I think that's when you pause, you take some time. I journal, like I said, those types of things to make sure that I can actually get in touch with what is mine and what is theirs.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously communication's key.
I'm so curious, especially about you first getting sober,
uh-huh,
because since your chart is so predominantly water, was it sort of like, whoa, I don't even know how to begin to tackle the self?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I found it extremely intimidating, mm-hmm, as I am assuming one would, that is changing a giant behavior like that.
Right.
Yeah, immediately I would feel anger, which I never really thought I had.
Interesting. Yeah.
Which is weird. It was even hard for me to yell at somebody on film. Like, I felt terrible. Like, anytime, you know, I was playing a character where I had to be extremely violent or yell, it's just not my nature to do so. I'm very caring and nurturing. And so it's weird. But I found that when I first got sober, I had a ton of anger. Like, things would piss me off so fast. And I realized I probably drank to shut off that anger.
Yes.
So that I was more of a people pleaser. Like, I was more of a Gemini rising, I should say. because who wants to be yelled at and be around somebody who's angry? I don't. Yeah. So I just shut it off. And so that happened in the beginning. I was getting very angry very quick and didn't know what to do with it. And
where to release it.
And it would last for a while, you know, like 2 days. And and I was like, ooh, I don't like sitting in this feeling.
Right.
But it's gotten less so. But when it comes, I let it come and I let it go. And that's what you got to do. And yeah, but the beginning of getting sober, that was very difficult. I was very sick. My appendix ruptured, which is insane. If you know anything about it, it takes a lot to rupture an appendix.
Mm.
Normally, I say normal people that aren't crazy, you would feel the pain beforehand. And I did, and I thought I had food poisoning. Mm-hmm. And I was at work, and I was carrying a very heavy machine gun and doing like all kinds of weird stuff that I do on my show. And I, by lunchtime around 2 p.m., couldn't stand up, and I was greenish white and clearly dying. And I got rushed to the hospital, and they took the appendix out. And
wow.
And as they were doing it, you know, I thought about it, and I had gotten sober before this happened, not too long before. And the doctor basically said if I had drank the night before this happened, I would have died. And I knew, like, when I was about to go into surgery, I had this quiet peace come over me. And I was like, I cannot drink anymore.
Mm.
And it was maybe related, maybe unrelated, the appendix rupturing. I'm not sure. I was under a tremendous amount of physical stress and mental stress and have been for the last few years. And it just all built up. And it really forced me to slow down and take a look at my life. Most people didn't know I even really drank.
Mm-hmm.
I did it mostly by myself in my apartment.
How old were you when you ruptured your, is that what it's called?
Appendix. It was just in 2018, the beginning of 2018.
Okay, got
so,
it. So pretty recently.
Yeah, pretty recent. And it was interesting. It was like, it was a huge wake-up call. And because the first part of my sobriety was actually in the hospital, because I was in the hospital for about a week, so they could get the infection out of my stomach, basically, make sure I was in the clear. But the first, you know, month or so of being sober, I was being looked after by just a ton of doctors because of this, you know, ruptured appendix. So in a crazy way, it really helped me get through the first month. I was, you know, being looked after. And I know that other people have you know, anybody looking in on that situation would be like, well, but you almost died. Like, that's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm glad though.
Yeah.
It was the wake up call I needed. I was so blind
yeah.
to what I was doing to myself that I needed a swift kick in the ass.
Your chart has, so for anyone who's unfamiliar, the sixth house is a house of health. And it's also the house of work service. And you, like we discussed last time, have a very interesting and intense and karmic, if you want to use that word, or just a place of learning, is that sixth house of health for you. You have Saturn in there, you have Mars in there, you have Pluto in there. And so for you, overworking your body and for you kind of like putting too much strain on your physical health is absolutely, for your chart, the place of awakening. It's a place where you're like called to consciousness and to be like, what's really going on here? Very often clients will come into a reading and try to get some insight into their health. Whenever a client suffers from some chronic illnesses or just a history around hidden ailments or parts of the body that don't seem to be functioning at their best, one of the most immediate places I'll look to is the sixth house of health. It also happens to rule our daily life. So it can rule routines, our diet and exercise regime. And in Jamie's case, we're going to discover the ways in which her chart influences the fact that she tends to overwork herself, and then at the same time, her body seems to rebel and respond and be a little bit like an alarm clock to her when she's not treating herself very well. Should we get into the sixth house a little bit?
Sure.
About the history around that? So first, I'm going to take you a little bit further back in time.
Okay.
You technically have Mars in the sixth house, and so that's actually a place where at times Mars can thrive. So I'm curious, like, have you always been athletic? Is physical activity something that's always been natural to you? I know it's a part of your character.
Yeah, I have always been athletic. I was a wrestler in high school.
That's amazing.
I have always been a bit of what I call a fighter. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always had a natural ability to, you know, do martial arts, like all that kind of stuff without actually having trained in martial arts.
Yes.
It's very strange. I pick up on those moves very quickly. I don't know if that's a past life thing or what. But I have always been very athletic. However, when it comes to work and health, they seem to be linked in a negative way for me. Mm-hmm. I've had some very severe injuries over the last 5 years at my job, and also in the past, having been linked directly to a stunt or something I've done at work. And it's funny because I do look back and say, most of those happened because of a lack of boundaries that I had. And I would just do, you know, whatever. I'd be like, yeah, sure, I can do it, because I could. Mm-hmm. But when you do it several times in a row and you're overly tired, that's stuff is going to happen that you don't want to happen.
Yes, a lot of wear and tear.
Yes. So I think you're right about that. It's overworking my body has really been so destructive. And instead of listening to my body, I chose to numb it out with alcohol.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand what was happening. I thought I had no choice. I thought I was, I was being forced to do all these things I didn't want to do. And I thought, well, I got to do it, because if I don't, then, all these people don't have a job and all these things. And I put so much pressure on myself, and it just got worse and worse and worse.
It's exactly where the Saturn and Pluto part comes in, because Saturn in particular just means like a seriousness or a heaviness to the sixth house of health. Mm. So it's, but also of work service. So like, it's not uncommon. I have this as well. I'm like a workaholic. Would you consider yourself at least at some point in your life a workaholic?
Yes. So much so that my show will be over in the middle of November, and I don't think I'm going to take a job till about February. Now, that's like, for anybody that's come off of an action show of 5 years, they'd probably take a full year off.
Yeah.
Like, especially, I now have like metal screws in my body. That's basically what has happened. But instead, I am like, okay, when's the next job coming? I'm ready to go. So in that way, it's how I live. It's like, I'm a workaholic.
Didn't you tell me a cool story about you being a waitress before? Remember you were like about, before you landed one really good job, were you waitressing?
I was waitressing for a while. I'd say like a little over a decade.
Oh, wow.
I loved it because I like, of course, feeding
fucking
people, taking care of
too.
People, right? I just loved it. I loved meeting different people. Especially if I was working at a restaurant that I loved, mm-hmm. you know, like sometimes I'd be at places that I hated, especially in Hollywood. But, right. There were a handful of places I really enjoyed, working at. And I was working at a place, this is a funny story. Right before I got the Thor franchise, mm-hmm. it's a tongue twister, for me, I was on a show called Kyle XY and it got canceled. And then the writers went on strike. There was like a whole, it just got really messy pretty fast. The economy bombed in 2009. There was like a lot of craziness going on. So to find a waitressing job was impossible.
Yeah.
Because you had, you know, people that were VPs of certain companies waitressing on the weekends to make ends meet.
Crazy.
So, and I had a great resume when it came to waitressing. So I was like, oh, I'll get hired. And that wasn't the case. The only place I could find a job was it's kind of funny, an Ohio State football bar in LA called Happy Endings. Now, why they called it that, I don't know. But I started working there and I was basically having to clean up the girls' bathroom, mop vomit off the floor. They had beer pong there. So that was mistake. The food was great. But it was just one of those places and it was really fun. I enjoyed it, but it really, you know, the thing was, they had a lot of TVs in there. And at one point, my show Kyle XY was on the television while I was working in the bar. And that, I think, was weird for a lot of people because they were like, isn't that you? And I'm like, yeah, it's me. But it's, you know, I've just always been somebody who will do whatever it takes to take care of myself. I'm not going to have an ego. That's funny. Not going to have an ego about it. That makes sense now that you told me that in my chart. But it was hard, you know, and I felt like a failure. There were a lot of things that I was feeling at the time. And I basically got a crash course in humility. Mm. And I can't say that I was like in dire needs of humility, but I think I operate really well in that state.
Absolutely.
And so within like 3 weeks, I got this giant, you know, movie franchise and I thought, wow. And I had also lost 10 pounds and gotten like pretty ripped. I was working out on my own every day and had no money to my name. And then that happened. So it's like that release of energy, like the acceptance of what is will bring forth the next stage of your life, right?
Yes.
I'm learning that right now.
You brought up the perfect kind of segue. You have what's called a grand trine. Ooh. And that, if it sounds positive, it should.
This okay. Basically, I was like, uh-oh, it could be bad. I don't know.
No, this is the part of the chart that kind of explains harmony within your personality, flow, where I kind of like to associate it with just like, what are you just naturally good at? Like, where was life always going to let things unfold in a positive way for you? So the grand trine you have going on is in your sun in Pisces, which is in the 10th house of career, fame, and honor. The second house has your moon in Cancer. And so that basically describes your inner world and your internal self, how you mother yourself, how you mother others, etc. And then that Saturn in the 6th house. So those actually make a really nice sense of harmony. And that's why I think it's very interesting that you're saying like staying in a humble state of mind and putting in the work and putting in the effort has benefited you and your career and your finances. Because those are the houses that are connected. 6th house is work service, 10th house is career, 2nd house is finances. So you're kind of on the money about that intuition, egolessness, and putting in a hard day's work seems to benefit you very greatly. Whereas other people might say taking big risks ends up getting me the money. In your chart's case, it's sort of like, well, we stick to waitressing until we know we're for sure able to land this big role, you know? The thing that I want to bring up in particular, your moon in Cancer really makes you this very nurturing presence. But before we get into that, I just want to say it makes a trine to Saturn. And so this is a part of you that's super grounded and sort of realistic and serious. And so it reminds me a little bit of the fact that you were able to put in a hard day's work before you, let's say, made it big time, however you want to call it. But I'm curious for you, what was your relationship like with mothering yourself from a young age up till now? Like, do you tend to be more of a strict parent with yourself? Or are you more nurturing and loving?
I think I'm more strict with myself and I need to be more nurturing and loving. I'm very nurturing and loving towards everybody but myself. Just almost to the point where I think that if I really let the Cancer moon take over, it could smother other people, which I'm so aware of. And I kind of just have to let people do their thing, you know, and I'm not a parent, but I'd have to say a great parent would possibly let their children make their own mistakes and be there to help them learn a lesson, but not, you know, it's kind of like what's the thing in the Bible where Jesus would rather teach the people to fish instead of give them fish or something like that. I don't know. Something like that, guys.
Yeah. We'll fact check it later.
Good old JC. But it's that sort of thing. I would actually be the type that would just give them the fish because I don't want them to want for anything. You know, my friends and family, I love them. But I have seen time and time again that that's not the most effective way to help somebody.
Whenever the moon, which is the deepest part of our chart and the way that we nurture others and ourselves, makes an aspect to Saturn, which is the planet of discipline and the planet of growth, it gives a certain level of seriousness to the character. So what Jamie's describing is this idea that she deeply cares about people, but she also feels responsible for them. So no matter how your moon aspects Saturn, whether it be a square or an opposition or a positive aspect like a trine or a sextile, it will give you this certain layer of being a parent, being a universal parent to anyone that you love and that you care about, and also give you this certain sense of, I'd rather be this for other people rather than necessarily giving this to myself. Saturn gives a bit of a coldness to the moon. And so in that sense, it can make the person on the deepest level feel somewhat unlovable, but also want to rescue others, probably due to this unconscious desire to rescue themselves.
You know, I'll tell a story. This is weird because this just happened to me. Mm-hmm. I was at a friend's birthday dinner and I went out to my car because I was about to leave and I saw a guy hurting his kid. Mm-hmm. And I, for several reasons, I have collected knives over my course of life, I should say. I have one hooked to the inside of my Jeep. So I grabbed it. And this all happened very effortlessly and very quiet, which was very strange for me because normally I would have chased the guy down and, you know, had somebody call the cops while I maybe stabbed him. I have no idea what I would have done.
Right.
But I stopped myself from acting with my emotions because I realized it wasn't going to be safe. So the guy was drunk. He had his kid around a building, like sort of on the side of the building, because I heard two people yelling and I thought they were laughing or something. And then I listened closer. I was like, that doesn't sound like a yell. I thought it was a guy and a girl. It ended up being a boy, probably around 11. And his dad had him up against a brick wall. So I yelled. I said, hey, what are you doing? And he started dragging him across the street and there were cars coming. And I was just like, oh God. And I then saw the mom and the daughter. I asked the mother right away. I said, ma'am, do you need help? And she started to make excuses for her husband's behavior. And I said, no. 'Cause I've grown up like this. I know what you're doing. And I said, your kids don't have to grow up this way. And I said, I've been there. I know what this is like. I know what it is. You deserve better. Your kids deserve better. And during this time of talking to her, the guy had let go of the boy. Otherwise I would have stabbed him, I think. I had the knife hidden in my jacket, you know, the kids didn't see it or anything, but the guy walked off. He like kind of ran away. And I thought to myself, I'm a 5'9" female. I'm not by any means giant, but I don't know why, but the guy was afraid of me and he didn't see that I had a weapon. My assistant was with me at the time. I told her to call the cops. And I just said what I could to this woman and her boy. The little girl had run after her dad. So I just literally saw basically parts of my childhood play out in this situation. Wow. I don't know what ended up happening. The guy was drunk. He eventually came back to the car. The wife got in the car, the kids in the back. I asked the boy if he was okay. You know, they drove off, before the cops came. And I just was so angry, but at the same time I was like, God willing, the words I spoke to her will hit her in the right time and in a place that sticks.
Yeah.
Because I was like, she has the power to take her kids away from that guy. You know, her excuses were he's never done this before, he was out playing golf with friends, he's drunk, he's this or that. It doesn't matter. You don't touch a kid or another person that way.
Yeah.
I would never touch somebody that way, another adult. Like, you just don't do that. It's not okay. So I credit that to my sobriety that I actually didn't just go after the guy and try to stab him, because in the past, that is what I probably would have done. Instead, I decided to try to keep the situation calm and talk to the people that were standing there, which were the mom and the boy at the time. So it was a weird thing. And I that's that cancer inside of me that like really is so fiercely protective in such a primal way that
I like to call it Mother Supreme.
Yeah, it might be the Mother Supreme. Yeah, because yeah. I at that time had no fear of what that guy could do to me and yeah. no doubt in my mind that I could stab him and kill him. And it's and in that knowing is maybe part of I don't know if it's an ego thing, but it surfaced when I needed it, and it was an adrenaline that was very steady and very calm.
Yeah.
Which was very interesting. It's probably also how I behaved as a kid a lot of times. So
is that the role that you played in your family?
I would say yes.
Protector?
From what I recall and what I my perceptions were as a kid, that is the role I played. Mm-hmm. I was very much the mother. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, it was what it was. And it obviously, when it comes to my chart, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't something I had to really try for. It was just, I always was wise beyond my years in that sense.
Yes.
You know, I think it definitely benefited my family for me to be that person.
Mm-hmm. And a strength beyond your years.
Right, right. Which, you know, obviously has caused its problems later in life now that I'm sober and dealing with all that stuff. But at the same time, it was necessary then, and sometimes it's necessary now. And I'm mm-hmm. glad that I can tap into that without as much effort.
Yes.
But yeah, so I think about that family often and just pray that the woman's okay and that she got her kids away. I didn't get their license plate. It just happened so fast.
Yeah.
And I really wish I would have gotten their license plate. But I said to her repetitively what I said, and I'm just, yeah.
It reminds me of your moon in Cancer mm-hmm. for many reasons, but to the certain extent that in those moments, I always think that in many ways we're rescuing our little selves, you know? Yeah. And I think mm-hmm. that what you were saying at the beginning of like, you tend to be mothering towards other people, but not necessarily yourself.
Right.
I feel like it sounds like there's a massive part of you that wanted to be rescued and maybe you had to be that person all the time. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what your chart's super good at. But just like you pointed out, where do you get held and where do you get taken care of? And that might be a question that comes up for you time and time again.
It does. It does. And I think the thing is, I'm learning how to do it for myself now because I, you know, like anything, like again, journaling, taking a bath, saying no to certain commitments so that I can literally just sit in my apartment and read a book. Mm-hmm. Like all of that is, what is it? Self-care, right?
Yeah.
I was terrible at that until I would say like the last couple of months. And now I'm realizing it's super necessary. Mm-hmm. And also, like, if I remind myself how I would take care of someone else that I love, I need to do that for myself mm-hmm. as well. And I think that's probably why things are like they are in my life. Like, as soon as I learn how to do X, Y, and Z, I will be able to find X, Y, and Z in other people, yes. you know? Because I'll know what to look for.
Yes. That's your inner empath. Now that we've unpacked a bit of Jamie's personal history and the way that she takes care of herself, an immediate question that most clients will ask is, okay, but what about my love life? And in Jamie's case, as is true in many charts cases, her love life can actually be a reflection of some wounds that have yet to be healed. We're going to cover her Venus sign, which describes how she loves, how she likes to be loved, just in general, what her affection style is. If you've ever taken the 5 love languages test, I tend to feel like you can map those to the different Venus signs. But then we're also going to talk about how that actually interacts with her Mars sign, which is a planet of anger and aggression, and how that can show up in conflict in relationships. And then ultimately, it's going to beg the question, what does Jamie's chart need out of a romantic relationship? Where can she grow and what can she learn in dealing with other people? What I want to bring up is this idea in your chart, which many, many, many people have, of where the conflict resides for you to understand what is hurting. And so that's why Venus makes a square to your Mars sign, which really just means sometimes in romantic relationships, that's where you find conflict being a portal into understanding that deeper heartbreak that you and I just discussed. So I'm just curious, are there any like common themes around the breakups or the heartbreaks that you've had along the way, or just relationships in general about how they've been your teacher? Because that's kind of what your chart would imply.
I think I've been grateful, and I am grateful, and I've been blessed to have some really good relationships, meaning that like I've learned quite a bit from each one. And sometimes I know as I'm going through it, I'm learning and I can understand where it's heading. And a lot of times it's after the fact. And I look back and go, oh, okay. You know,
that's
hindsight,
what that
right?
Was. Right.
But I will say, at least like, I guess it's interesting because, a lot of my relationships before, you know, I wasn't sober. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the relationships I had before I got sober were mostly, very like nurturing relationships. It's just that I was basically the dickhead, you know, I like was like, oh, I can't handle this. This is, you're too nice. Like right. You're too great.
What
you know,
is
or
this?
Whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, there was one relationship in particular that helped me heal, my relationship probably to children and some past things with, you know, my childhood that needed healing. And I can literally look back and say that is exactly why that relationship happened. So it was less about me and the partner I had at the time, but more about the kids that were involved in the relationship as well. And I'll always be grateful for that. And then, you know, moving forward, it's just, I realize I'm, as you guys can probably tell in this interview, I'm extremely open. Mm-hmm. I really don't like to censor myself. I find it unauthentic, you know, like, although I can choose to say what I want to say and choose to not say certain things. I just find that anytime I try to censor myself, it's just, I'm somebody
doesn't
else.
Sit well, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sit well. Now, a lot of people, you know, like somebody could literally come up to me and we could have a coffee and I'll tell them what's going on in my life. They don't really have to ask. That's the thing about me. And it's interesting. Like I don't need somebody to help me speak my truth, which is interesting. I just need to learn what is my truth. That's
yes.
basically what it is. Right now, other people, I'd say more people than not need to be asked, say, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
You get a one word answer. Fine. Okay. Want to elaborate? Like you really have to try to get them to open up.
Yep.
I've found that I'm not good at that. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at asking like, hey, I can ask, hey, how are you? But immediately if I get a read on somebody that they don't want to talk about it, I don't pry.
Right.
Some people need the prying. Mm. Some people need to be like, they need help
really
opening up.
Open, yeah.
Right. So in my relationships, I've learned that that's important. And I wasn't as good at that, for a very long time. Because again, if I get a vibe that's like, no, leave me alone, I'm not going to continue trying to pry you open.
Totally.
It's like, why? Like you basically are telling me to leave you alone or like you don't want to talk about it.
Right.
But I do realize like some people are not as in touch with their feelings as maybe I am because of my chart and history. So that has ultimately been part of a, you know, demise in certain relationships I've had.
Yeah. What's super interesting about you saying that is that your seventh house is in Sagittarius and your first house, like we discussed, is in Gemini. You're the talker and they're sort of like the seeker and the doer. And so like, it is kind of what you're describing of like being attracted to and having a history of partners who don't necessarily give information away as easily as your chart might.
Right.
So that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And at the same time, I think Pisces is pretty introverted, right? So it's, right. I think so. Right.
Yep.
And then, so the funny thing is like when I'm in a setting like this, where it's just me and you in this room right now, and I really like you, I'm very open, but if I'm around somebody that immediately I feel unsafe around, I won't say anything.
Totally.
I'll literally just completely shut down and I'll use a part of myself that doesn't come out as much.
That's that duality in the Gemini
rising.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're not safe enough to get me as a whole. So
yes.
I'm just going to give you the side that scares most people
yeah.
instead, you know? So, and that the shitty thing is that in relationships, that side will come out occasionally because I won't feel safe.
Yeah.
And when I don't feel safe, it's like, oh, you don't get any of
anything.
This.
Yeah.
And so that can, I'm sure, to the other person look unauthentic. Like,
yeah.
oh, who are you? Like, you know, this is weird.
Yeah.
But if I, it's just, that's really what it is that I feel unsafe or a lack of control, that will come out. And that can break a relationship. What does it say? Like, love begins with understanding and ends with misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Miscommunication is literally why certain wars are fought.
Absolutely.
So it's hard to communicate with somebody who speaks a different language than you.
Yes.
So if I'm, you know, dating somebody who's got a lot of fire in their chart or a lot of air or whatever. What is Gemini? Gemini's
air.
Air. Okay. Mm. So I'm like,
you have air.
I'm
water.
Sparkling water technically. Yeah. All right. That's great. That's my favorite drink.
Totally sparkling water.
So
that's fantastic.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. Put a little air and a bunch of water, and there you go.
Yes. The other partner is earth or fire, because that's right. What you don't have.
Okay. Yeah. So that can be problematic, because what I feel is so natural and simple for me to express, they're not hearing. Mm. And then whatever they're saying or doing, I'm not perceiving as they meant it to be perceived. So it's huge. And I'd say the last two major relationships I've had, they have been my opposite. Mm. And ultimately there has repetitively been so many misunderstandings.
Wow.
To where I get so confused. And then of course, take it on myself to think I'm the one that's screwing up everything.
Which is your Chiron in the 12th house.
Makes sense.
So I'm going to get a little bit romantic.
Ooh, okay.
Because my Venus is in Pisces, your Sun is in Pisces. We are romantics.
We are. Yeah.
What do you want out of partnership? Like if you could... Because it does tell a story in your chart, but I'd rather hear it from you. Like, mm-hmm. if there's one thing that you know, all of us could be fine on our own, I do believe.
Absolutely.
But we have partnership for a reason. Like, what do you want from partnership?
You know, I think it's interesting. I've been thinking about this a lot. Because what I've always thought of is what I don't want.
Mm.
So now I'm like, wait a second. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of obvious things you don't want in a partnership, but I should start thinking more about what I do want.
Yeah.
Like what's good for me? Like, what do I feel would make a partnership worth the effort?
Right.
Would be a sense of safety. I think people confuse that with stability. Safety for me is a very truthful, open partnership in the sense that like I can say my truths and not be judged for it.
Yeah.
So with that, it's like, I want to make sure that if I say, hey, this is how I'm feeling, the other person just doesn't go, well, fuck you. And like leaves. It's like, oh man, I just poured my heart out and, this person couldn't accept it. So I think this feeling of safety is, big for me. Someone who won't give up on me so quickly mm-hmm. would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for me, especially where I'm at right now, I'm really in the throes of self-discovery. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't need to, find anybody right now. But something that I would just really love, somebody who just doesn't give up so quickly.
Yeah.
Because I think I have it in me to not give up on someone.
Absolutely.
And someone who's independent, someone who has their own thing going would be great. I like alone time. I didn't really know that until I got sober. And that's like, oh yeah, get out of here. But yeah, it's important important for me to remain an individual and do things that I love, like road trips with my girlfriends or whatever it is, mm-hmm. And not have the person take it personally.
It reminds me of the dependency paradox.
What is that?
So
sounds terrible.
It's I think you'll like it.
Oh, okay.
But it's the concept of I need to feel safe in order to be free. And so that's why it's like dependency, but the paradox of that. So it's this concept. They use the example of like this couple goes on this like physical game show where you have to do all these like crazy physical activities in order to win whatever prize. And the partner at one point says to his girlfriend, like, I can't hold your hand right now. Like, we're trying to focus. Like, I need to focus on what we're doing. And then they ended up losing. And she said in the interview later, she was like, I just felt so insecure and unsafe because my partner wouldn't hold my hand. She was like, I wanted to do all this stuff. I just needed to know that he was physically by my side. Mm-hmm. And so it's this paradox of what you're describing of like, I want to feel safe. Like, I want to know that you're not going anywhere so that I can be free to go do all these amazing things that I want to do with my life.
Right. And also like, free from judgment. Like I know people have bad days. People have great days. People have sides of themselves that are very, centered in the ego, and those things happen. And it's like, okay, but it's okay. You're you.
Yes.
Like, you're not going to be 100% all the time. And that's something, you know, someone to grow with, not grow into, but side by side, just growing next, like somebody I can walk next to, somebody that's an equal in that sense.
Fuck yeah.
It's so important. And you know, there are things like these types of things that I'm saying, I just didn't realize that's what I was looking for, what I really want to manifest in a partnership, and also what I want to give to someone else. But this, you know, do or die type of fantasy that I think I used to have in my head, I don't anymore, is really destructive because you're putting your entire identity or self-worth and validation in someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think that there were times, especially early in my sobriety, I really felt penetrable in the sense that if somebody came up to me and said, oh, you're ugly, I would actually believe them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's crazy to think about. Like, I just, that some person's opinion could change my life in the worst way.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, with friends and things like that, I want people to tell me like it is, but I guess, you know, in order to have a good partnership and good friendships, you have to be secure in who you are.
Yeah.
And not give up on yourself so quickly. And I think, you know, all those things ultimately are what broke my previous partnerships and friendships. Mm-hmm. Insecurity, mm-hmm. big time. Feeling like I wasn't good enough. Like, that shouldn't be put on the other person.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with them. It's my current state of mind.
Yeah.
At the time. So it's to let all that go and just know what you're worth. Meaning, like, and a lot of people take that the wrong way. Knowing what you're worth is just saying, like, hey, like, I'm a human being. I love, I care for people. You know, I'm this and I'm that, and these are my strong talents and these are my weaknesses. But once you know yourself and know your worth, like, then you can find somebody that, you know, is an equal for you.
Absolutely.
But if you don't know that, man, you're just like, almost anybody will do. And that's the worst.
Yeah.
So now that we know Jamie in her love life, in her professional life, in her personal life, one of the questions that is yet to be answered is sort of, what is she here to do? The midheaven in the chart tells a pretty big story of how we are going to act and be seen in the public. And so with a client, it can give me a good indicator if they're lost in their career or at a crossroads or just really can't seem to find purpose in their career. The midheaven can tell a story of what they might be very good at. And so in Jamie's case, we're going to dive into her midheaven in Aquarius. We're also going to relate it to her north and her south node, which is the woman that she's meant to become and sort of her karmic destiny, and try to tie a story together of where Jamie's headed and what her ultimate purpose is supposed to be.
Your midheaven, which is your career, is in Aquarius. And it's in the ninth house of higher education, expansion, in some cases spirituality, but not so much like the metaphysical realm, but more like how do you turn spirituality into something that like really is concrete. Mm-hmm. And in the sense of like, you know, for me being an astrologer could potentially reside in the ninth house because I'm like educating people, et cetera, et cetera. What for you, and by the way, an Aquarius midheaven really just means you're a rule breaker. You're sort of like someone who's going to be known for forging her own path. Like mm-hmm. Aquarians never like to be told what to do. So you, as your career will unfold, what we will witness and probably already have is like taking unconventional roles, mm-hmm. maybe even deciding being an actress is not everything. There's this other really crazy side of my personality that I want to like show to the public. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious for you. Again, you can tell us as much or as little as you want. But like, where do you want your career to go? What do you want to offer the world with all of this crazy cool energy that your chart has?
I guess for me, I'd like to, I'll definitely be continuing in action for at least the next year and a half. And I really like that. I like playing these types of characters that are just
badass.
So badass. Yeah, it's so much fun. It's yeah. just a lot of fun, really. But I would love to show the quieter side of my personality and my talent. I don't think I've ever said that out loud. I really would. I have parts of me that aren't just the, you know, twirling a sword and shooting guns and, you know, being this like tatted badass, like whatever. It's yeah. That's really fun for me and I really enjoy it. But I also have so many other sides that are much quieter that yeah. I would love to pepper into my career and take roles that are a little bit more deep.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. I also have very like odd sense of humor, which I have done some dark comedies before, but I would enjoy
that
too.
Doing
that. Oh yeah, my assistant calls it my Janine Garofalo. So yes, Lauren, thank you very much, Lauren.
Yes.
But it's true. Like there's so many different sides. So I think it would be fun to sort of show that through television and film. And then on the flip side, in just who I am, I would love to talk more with people.
Yes.
I really like that. I like to listen to them, and somehow, words of wisdom come out of this mouth and I don't know where they come from. Like just when I saw the woman that was in trouble with her son, the things that I said, I even thought back on it was like, that was something divine, because all I wanted to do was stab the guy. Mm-hmm. I really did. I was like, he deserved, you know, in my opinion, the worst kind of punishment. And I just, instead, I was there to plant a message that won't ever leave their ears.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is so weird mm-hmm. and interesting, because that's not who I would have been in the past. I would have chased him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard to do after having knee surgery, mind you. So I kind of had to stay put in a weird way. I was like in a very odd position, but I would love to like speak more, you know, get more active with, you know, sobriety and that type of thing, and help people any which way I can with what I've been through in my life.
Can I say something so crazy?
Yeah.
I was just like kind of floored when you said me pre-sobriety would, and what you could maybe impulsively wanted to do was like run towards him.
Mm-hmm.
But instead you communicated. Is your south node, which is the woman that you used to be, that's your karmic debt, that's like, you know, who are you on your worst day, who are you when you're not being your highest self, is in Sagittarius. That's the doer.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's a part of you that was like, I'm gonna run this knife into him and like do some justice, you know.
Mm.
It came from a good place, but obviously you understand the other flip side to that.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Your north node, which is a woman that you're meant to become, it's almost like giving me chills as we're talking about it, is in the sign of Gemini. By the way, have you ever been called an old soul?
Oh, all the time since I like popped out.
Yeah.
And I felt that way though.
When the north node is on the ascendant, so it's the same as your rising sign,
mm-hmm.
it basically just means that like the path that you're heading, like the woman that you're meant to become, is very close to the woman that you've already started to present. And exactly like you said, like straight out the womb, we're kind of like already there. And so for you, in particular, we talked about the downsides of your Gemini self, the chameleon-like behavior. But the beautiful sides of this Gemini is the communicator. It's those words where you have no idea where they came from, and yet they're divine, and they can truly reach someone and help them understand.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to echo back to you that your chart would love for you to start speaking more and figuring out the platforms in which speaking would make sense,
mm-hmm.
who you want to be speaking with in particular. Gemini in particular is about the one-on-one relationships. It is about doing things, sitting down with me right now. You know, the intimacy level is very much Gemini, versus like Leo is much more like, let's get on a big stage and like, you know, millions of people. Yours is more about what are the human connections that I can build over time that really, you know, help me get towards the woman that I meant to become. So
that
I think that
sense.
Example is pretty killer, honestly.
Pun intended.
No, but yeah, see, that makes a lot of sense for you, I think.
Yeah, I find like a quiet strength in one-on-one communication, and especially when I just slow down, because I tend to move so fast and speak so quickly, when really, if I sat with my thoughts for just half a second more, it would be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably be the doer versus the communicator in that sense, because I am impulsive, extremely impulsive. And I realize like that can be great in certain situations. You know, I think quickly. I can, you know, come up with a solution fast, whether it's the best solution or not. That's, you know, we don't know, but more than likely it'll suffice, but it's not the best.
Right.
But once I take a moment, like say somebody needs me to do something, I can say, you know what? I need a little time to think about that, and I'll get back to you. Like I can absolutely take those moments in that time for myself, which I didn't realize I could.
Mm.
So I would often say, sure. And then figure out, you know, the logistics later, like how am I going to make it work?
Yes.
So I think that slowing down is really what's going to end up changing my life.
The chart tells a story of how we were uniquely engineered and what we were uniquely set up to do in this lifetime. And so the way I'm going to end every episode and what I'm about to ask Jamie unprompted is, what does she think her destiny is? What does she think she was uniquely made to do? What does she think she was made for? Yes, this is a hard question to ask, but if you're listening and if you're looking at your chart, I would very much encourage you to ask yourself the same question.
What do you think you were made for?
The first word that comes into my head is healing, a healer. Yeah. I do think that's what it is. I think I have all these other things that I'm good at and that I can do that will make me money so I can feed myself. But ultimately, I think I feel, as we like to say, us Pisces and Cancers, we like to say we feel.
We feel.
And we being the Gemini rising, right?
Right.
That I was put on this earth to not only heal myself, but help others heal. Damn. And that's where I've always felt the most peace. Whether it be through cooking somebody food when they can't make it their own, or speaking in AA meetings. I'm going to be speaking at some prisons coming up. Like, that type of stuff for me, it literally has no ego attached to it. And I think that's why I like it the most. Whereas, like, you know, with this industry, my industry, acting and, you know, all that stuff, there's a certain amount you have to channel some of your ego, or you wouldn't.
Of course.
It would be very difficult to exist in that industry. But yeah, healing. Being a healer of some kind.
I don't think I can end on a higher note. I think I'm going to cut myself off there. Thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to What Time Was I Born? If you want to find me online in the interwebs and in the crazy Instagram world, you can find me at NadineJane_astrology or on my website, www.NadineJaneAstrology.com.